It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
We'd like to thank the Academy for allowing us to do so. How you doing, Will?
Let me tell you, things are bad out there.
How bad?
Things are rough. This is, you know, every Tuesday I do the PM show with Larry Minetti. And, you know, I do the film reviews on it. And I was driving to the studio today. And I stopped to get gas because they have the cheapest gas station, like, right by. Like, it's always, like, 20 cents cheaper than everywhere else.
But you have to speak Korean.
Well, the place is, like barter town. You know, it's like you have to fight in Thunderdome there. And I got into a screaming match with somebody today because I was backing up into a space so my gas tank was aligned properly.
Yeah.
But this guy just swooped in and he goes, I saw you start to pull away. I'm like, I said, I had to drive in. I had to back in. That's why I pulled up. He goes, I don't know, man. And this guy was like eight times the size of me. And of course, I'm throwing a slew of profanities at him. Not safe at all. But what bothered me about it was that he knew. Like, if he said, I'm a prick, I took you, I would have no problem with it. But he was, like, playing dumb. I can't deal with
that. You gotta be careful out there. They got guns out there.
Yeah, well, it was Wayne LaPierre, actually.
Was it?
Yeah, it was him.
Probably shouldn't have cut him off.
What's going on in the world of Will Sean?
Well, podcasts? I know you guys haven't heard about this in a few weeks, but we are on our road to 200 still. We're at 192 likes. Eight more people. So, come on. Get a friend. Eight more likes, and then we will leave you alone until we...
So we're close to 300.
No, what do you mean? 220.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be the road to 204. So, you know, you people know the drill. And help us make 2013 the most successful year ever of the Will Sean Podcast.
So far, it's going well.
It is.
We've got big guests. We've got bigger guests coming up. Everything's great.
Yeah, it's all coming up Will Sean Podcast.
Who's our sponsor this week?
This week's episode is brought to you by Uncle Harvey Weinstein's Miracle Award Polish, made with the tears of the losing nominees. This patented formula will bring out the glow in your coveted statue. Also good for Emmys, Golden Globes, and Tonys. Fuck you, Grammys.
That's right. That's right. Weinstein doesn't abide the
Grammys.
That's
what he sells on the side. It's his miracle polish.
And that's how he could, that's how he got where he is today.
It's true. Hawk and snake oil.
On the show today, let's face it, we've got a bunch of topics, but it's probably mostly going to be Oscars, as it should be. We're going to have an Oscar-related enemy. We're going to talk about the show. So you know what? Let's just get right to it. We're very excited to talk about the show and herself a little bit. The film and television editor of Backstage, Janelle Riley.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm very excited to have you here because I feel you're the perfect person to, you know, break down a lot of this stuff with us because you've talked all this, you interview all these people.
That's right, I do, for better or worse.
Yeah, well, hopefully mostly better. It's funny, before we get started, I wanted to ask you some questions about that. And a few years ago, me and my buddy Nick, we used to, before he became a successful actor on Revenge, we had a lot of time to go to a lot of screenings, especially around award season. He would always get me into a lot of them because, you know, all these actors screen. But we didn't end up going to a lot of backstage screens, and we'd go to these other screenings, and we would always hate the commentators. Like, we'd always hate them because they would always seem to ask really self-serving questions.
Yes.
And would drive us crazy.
Like the time that Judd Apatow moderated Daniel Day-Lewis and Paul Thomas Anderson.
I was supposed to do that one.
They fired me
for Judd Apatow.
Well,
they should have went with you.
Although it was highly entertaining, let me tell you.
That's what I hear.
I will never forget that Q&A.
I heard his first question was, which do you like better, Superbad or Knocked Up?
Yep.
It was.
Yeah.
That was.
And Daniel Day-Lewis politely laughed until the question kind of went away.
Then he killed him.
But, you know, it's funny because we're always talking about, because we've got some awful ones. And then a couple years back, we went to a screening of Like Crazy.
Aww.
With a Q&A with Anton Yelchin and Felicity Jones. And you conducted it. I didn't know you. We didn't have a podcast, and I didn't know you. And when it ended, Nick turned to me and said, finally, a good Q&A. Finally, no stupid questions were asked.
Oh, bless you.
So that's coming from a man who thinks every question is stupid. So there you go.
The highest of compliments.
The highest of compliments. And it was an excellent screening that night.
It's funny because people started coming up to me in recent years and saying, like, oh, my God, you're so great at this. Thank you so much. And I was like, it's not really that hard. And then I would go to screenings and see those moderators you talk about, and I realized, oh, it's not just that I'm really good at this, it's that other people are really bad.
Well, not to throw people under the bus, but what do you think makes you good at, like, what are you doing that you think?
I think it's simple. I'm not up there assuming people are there to see me.
Yeah.
They want to hear what the other people have to say. They don't care what I think about the movie. I'm always know we're doomed when the person's like, now, when this spoke to me, or what I really liked about this, it's like, nobody cares. Move on. Also, just do your research. I mean, first I want to say there are some great moderators out there, and many of them are friends of mine, but like...
You guys have a club.
Yeah, we meet every Thursday.
And drink in moderation.
Yeah. Look at the pun. Like, I saw one guy who said, did a Black Swan Q&A and asked Winona Ryder if she called upon her own history as a washed-up actress to play a washed-up ballerina. And I just thought, were you trying to be like, what do you expect her to say? And I don't think he was trying to take a jab at her. I think he was just utterly clueless.
No, rule one, insult the guest.
Exactly. Always put some at ease.
That puts them at ease, just really, you know, hey, this is a big, you know, now that you've kicked the drugs and alcohol, this is a big turnaround for you.
Right. You used to suck. What happened? Yeah. What did you do?
Yes. So it's, you know, people forget that they're there to see Ryan Gosling. Mm-hmm. They're there to see...
You kind of just got to get the ball rolling.
Exactly. You have to be self-effacing, I would imagine, in doing that part.
By the way, this is something we do not do on the Will Sean podcast. Will and Sean have not perfected that art just yet.
So go ahead and insult me. I'm up for it.
Well, I'm not going to insult you, but I'm going to ask, like, how did you get started in doing this, like writing about film and interviewing people and stuff like this? Like, how did this all begin?
Kind of sadly, I went to college at the University of Oregon, and I wanted to be a film student, and then 2 years in, they canceled the film program.
Oh, wow.
And they said
they need it for the football program.
Right.
Ducks need a new uniform.
So they said, the best we can do is you can transfer all those film credits over to the journalism program. So I was like, all right, fine. I'm a journalism major. And weirdly, it worked out. I mean, I moved out to L.A. and did sort of the PA work on really bad Clint Howard movies, as opposed to the really good Clint Howard movies.
Not like Ice Cream Man. Like,
oh, I wish it had been Ice Cream Man.
That's a good Clint Howard movie.
When I first met him, like, the first thing I said was, Ice Cream Man. I had a total geek out. This was post-Ice Cream Man, not to date myself. But... I'd always been a writer and just a film fanatic, and started writing for free for websites back when websites were kind of new.
Back when AOL was the only vehicle.
Yeah, those great, like, Angel Fire.
Well, that's a lot better than what I'm doing now. I'm writing for websites for free when websites are kind of old now, so.
And oversaturated.
Yeah.
But you do it because you love it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. If you would do it without getting paid, like, that shows a true passion for it, and that... eventually, like, built up enough clips that I was able to start writing for Backstage. So it paid off.
So then what started you hosting these Q&As, like being the person they send out to, like, Backstage for a screening where you're going to sit down with Anton Yelchin and talk about like crazy?
I love that of all the Q&As I've done, you pick Anton Yelchin.
That's the one.
The kids will love Anton Yelchin.
I did Brad Pitt last week, but let's talk about Yelchin.
I want to only talk Yelchin. This is a big pro Yelchin podcast.
I don't forget Felicity Jones.
Yeah. I don't know if you know the joke about that, but Yelchin used to be my nemesis.
Really?
So the fact that you saw that Q&A is hilarious to me.
I got some dirt on Yelchin, but I'll save that for after the podcast that I can tell you about. But
I hated him. Hated him.
Yelchin!
Yes, Yelchin! He annoyed me, and then I saw like crazy, and I think, I can't remember if Fright Night came out before or after that. But
yeah, I think it might have been after.
But between Like Crazy and actually meeting him in person, and he is so charming and sweet and funny, I have done a bit of a turnaround.
I was shocked how, and then we really are talking about Antonio, but I was shocked when he did the Q&A, because I thought it was he had a lot more thoughtful answers than I thought he would. I mean, I don't know what I was thinking.
You thought he was Chekhov from Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, like, where's your accent? Where's your Russian
was
accent?
Was he Charlie Bartlett?
He was Charlie Bartlett.
That was one of the reasons I didn't like him.
Well, moving on from Yelchin, what was the first Q&A that you did that you had to get up in front of a crowd with someone of note? And
it was the cast of 24 back in season 2.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Dennis Haysbert was late, and I had to stall in front of an audience.
Kiefer is Kiefer.
Kiefer didn't show.
Oh.
Wait. Yes. I like that we have the cast of 24.
Right.
Except for Jack Bauer.
Yeah. Yeah, my very first year.
Tony
was
Almeida
much,
and Chloe.
You're joking. Chloe wasn't on yet.
Yes, she
we
came.
Didn't even have
Michelle.
Kim. We
That's
had
right.
Kim and Tony Almeida and Dennis Haysbert, who were all wonderful and charming, but yeah, no Jack. My first year where I really started doing Q&As, I think it was around the same time, was really Trial by Fire, where things like that would happen. I did a Brokeback Mountain Q&A with Heath Ledger and Michelle Williams. People waited in the rain for an hour at the TV Academy, which is a huge theater.
Yeah, out there in the valley.
Yeah, and they didn't show up. And my dad had driven in from Arizona that day just to see, like, his daughter, like, you know, take the stage and be all fancy. And I found out 10 minutes before the Q&A they weren't coming, and I had to go out there and tell the audience. And I made my dad stand up, and I said, I know you're all probably all really angry, but this is my father. He drove all the way from Arizona, and if he's not upset, you can't be.
But we have Kate Mara.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Heath Ledger knew how to quit you.
In their defense, I have to say their baby was sick.
Oh.
So you can't, yeah. It's,
you know, but anyone who has a baby could use that baby for an excuse for anything.
I wasn't going to say
never
it,
know.
But...
Not going to make a terrible Heath Ledger joke.
I had to bite my tongue there, too.
Has there ever been somebody, like, now you're probably used to doing this, but was there ever somebody, especially early on in this, that you were, like, really, like, you got a little starstruck by, like, coming in, like...
I'm so weird. It's never the people you would expect to be starstruck by. I've done Q&As with Daniel Day-Lewis. I've done them with Brad Pitt. I was a little starstruck by Brad Pitt. It's always like...
Yelchin.
No, it's even weirder. It's somebody who was on Cheers, because Cheers is like...
George Wendt just puts the fear of God
at
you.
But, you know, you grow up watching somebody.
Yes, exactly. It's the most random people. The other day I met Common, and I almost fell over. And I don't even know him as a musician. I know him from the movie Just Right.
With Queen Latifah.
Yes! And then I saw Queen Latifah the next day.
Oh, yeah, and it all came
together.
A whole
Just Right reunion. Yeah, no, it's the people that I choose to geek out on are, like, poor, I'm probably going to butcher his name, too, poor Brian Hegeland, who, you know, won the Oscar for writing L.A. Confidential. None of that matters. He wrote and directed A Knight's Tale, the greatest movie of all time, and I have embarrassed myself in front of that man so many times, it's not even funny. Chris Terrio, who I was a fan of his, not just because of Argo, but he wrote a script called Ends of the Earth. That is one of the most beautiful scripts I've ever read. Sobbed hysterically while reading it.
Is that getting made? I read...
I believe it is, but
Weinstein
has it. Yeah, they'll make it at some point, and Jennifer Lawrence is attached. But I didn't know any of that at the time, and I just
didn't they announce that she was going to be doing that? They greenlit that.
Yes.
Okay.
So it when I first read it, though, I was just, you know, and I remembered this guy's name, Chris Terrio. Then later realized when Argo came out, it was the same guy, and several times was supposed to meet him and do Q&As, and it never panned out. And then I saw him in a hotel lobby, and I pretty much mugged him. And he's the sweetest, but he's very shy, and he's very soft-spoken, and he was so polite, but I was like... And I had just been talking to Jennifer Lawrence about him. Like, literally, I'd been doing an interview with her in the bar, like, 10 minutes earlier, and I was like, Jennifer and I were just talking about you, and I think you're amazing, and she told me you're really shy, so this is probably your nightmare, some big woman yelling at you in the middle of a lobby. And he was like, yes, yes. And now every time I see him, it's a joke, because I keep running into him at hotels, weirdly enough. You go to a lot of hotels during award season, and I'm always like, just making a habit of yelling at you in hotels.
Now, one of the other things that always would drive me crazy with the Q&As are the questions that come from the audience.
Oh my god.
I remember once a screening of Juno, a movie that I had really enjoyed. It was like about a month before it came out. I was thrilled to see it, and I loved it, and I just read Diablo Cody's book. So I'm like, oh, I really like this woman. And I remember, I can't remember exactly what the woman said, but the woman who sat next to me at, in the theater asked Diablo Cody some long-winded question. She was talking about stripping. It was weird and awkward. And I slowly was moving as far away to the, from
not
this
with
woman.
Her.
Yeah, because not that it would, man, not that she would know, but I didn't want anyone to think. I didn't want Diablo Cody to think I was with this woman.
One of the best Q&As I was ever at when I was in college, it was a screening of Adaptation. And so that movie is enough of a mindfuck, snake eating its own tail. Nicolas Cage is playing Charlie Kaufman and Charlie Kaufman. But as soon as the movie's over, the real Charlie Kaufman walks out on stage.
God.
And they get up there, and Spike Jonze goes, just so you know, this was like on a Thursday, he goes, we locked this movie on Monday. You're the first public audience to see it. So we don't really have our head wrapped exactly around what this film is yet. So feel free with your questions. So somebody raises their hand. This was at Berkeley. So you get this professor, you know, erudite, intellectual. Mr. Jonze, Mr. Kaufman, what is your theories on the art of adapting written material for the screen? This long, involved question about adaptation. And he looks at her. He looks up at the screen. He looks at her and goes, didn't you just watch the fucking movie? Next. That's his thoughts on adapting material.
Well, can you... Are there any, like, standout, like, awful questions that you could just throw at us that people might have asked?
So many. Probably the most uncomfortable was after a screening of Revolutionary Road. Someone
that
got
movie was uncomfortable.
Yes. Someone got in a fight with Michael Shannon about abortion.
Really?
Yes, because Michael Shannon's not in the scene where Kate Winslet gives herself an abortion. Michael Shannon's in two scenes in that movie, and this woman started screaming and crying hysterically about how abortion should be legal. And
so clearly this was about her. This had nothing to do with General Zod.
Exactly. I can remember. You get to know. You can sort of figure out who the troublemakers will be, and there actually is one person who, he always wears a yarmulke.
Oh, great. My people.
And he, for a while there, would show up at all our screenings and always ask he would always ask questions tying the movie into the Holocaust, which is fine, except the movies in question were Little Miss Sunshine and Up in the Air. And I saw Alan Arkin shut him down in the hallway one time before the Little Miss Sunshine Q&A.
Arkin already knew about this guy.
He had a sense for him. But he came up and was like, he's like, oh, I just want to ask you, like, what was it like to play your character as a Holocaust survivor? And Alan Arkin was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, well, you know, because he was in the war. And he's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. He wasn't a Holocaust survivor. And just kind of, like, walked away. And you would think that would stop the guy, but he's still, like...
Is this guy an Italian? Does he speak Italian, or does he have, like, an Italian name?
I don't know what his name is.
Wait, you know this
guy? These people go to all these screenings.
I think I was at a Wagner lecture where he almost got into a fight with James Conlon, who is the music director and the conductor of the LA Opera, and Zev Yaroslavsky, the county supervisor, manhandled this guy out of the auditorium at the Simon Wiesenthal Center. I think this could be the same guy. And there was a reporter there for the LA Times that got written up.
Oh,
yeah. Man, this guy's the worst.
This guy has a PhD in, also, he's very much about this. Like, he always brings up the Holocaust. And,
you know, I hope this is the same guy.
If there's more than one out there.
Yeah, because we got to stop these people.
Yeah.
Holocaust advertisers are the worst.
The worst question I heard this season was at a Denzel Washington Q&A. And you know this guy worked really hard on this. He stood up and he said, in all of your movies where you have called someone my man, who is your man?
Thinking about it all day.
Yes! And Denzel was like, I've only said that in one movie, American Gangster, and it was kind of as a joke. He's like, no, you've said it in other movies. I'm like, oh, you're going to argue with Denzel Washington. And then he's like, no, I've never said it in another movie. And then he's like, well, in this movie, John Goodman says it to you. And he's like, yeah, I'm not John Goodman. I was like, the resemblance may be startling, but this is actually Denzel Washington.
If you really wanted to win the crowd over to his side, he goes, my man, I am not John Goodman.
Trust me, the crowd was won over the moment he walked out.
Yeah. Well, listen, you mentioned this award season. We want to get into it with the Oscars now. But before we do, where can people find out about stuff you're writing? Where can people read stuff you're writing? Where can people find out about any screenings you're hosting? Where can they find out everything about you?
Oh, dear.
10 words or less.
Yeah. The IRS. I guess the best place is goodanotherblog.wordpress.com, which is my new blog.
Nice. Said like good, another blog.
Yeah, it's actually, oh, good, another blog. But I was trying to make the URL as short as possible. There's also, you can follow me at Twitter, under Janelle Riley, JenelleRiley. Trying to think.
Backstage, yeah, you have articles.
Yeah, and I write for Backstory, Jeff Goldsmith's magazine.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah, I go to a lot of his Q&As. Yeah. I think everybody does.
Yeah, he's one of those punks that I'm talking about who's in the club.
Yeah.
The Q&A club.
Yeah, he's approved.
But who moderates the moderators?
And look, if you're a good listener to the podcast, you've already read all of her work on her blog, because the link is up there
and
on our Facebook.
Sent her very divisive and combative emails comparing all of this year's Academy Award-winning films to the Holocaust.
So, I guess the first question is pretty general. What'd you think of the show?
Of the Oscars?
Yeah.
You know, this was such a weird year.
It
really was. It's in all the years I've been doing this, which I don't know, maybe 7. But Sasha Stone at Awards Daily has been doing this for 14 years, and she will be the first to say this was the most unpredictable. You know, I feel like by October we usually have a pretty good idea who's going to win.
And that's why I kind of loved this award season, because it was like going into, even though Argo started to emerge as the favorite, there was still even a little bit in the back of people's heads like, well, because it didn't get that director thing, and that's like an aberration kind of thing. Like, and they really did spread the love. Like, a lot of races were a coin flip going in.
I think, with the exception of supporting actor, which was so crazy, there was a lot of back and forth. There was a lot of flip-flopping. But in the end, I feel like the people who were always going to win won. Felt like it was always going to be Argo as Best Picture. Before people even saw Les Mis, they knew it was going to be Anne Hathaway.
They knew it was going to be Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah. I actually thought, if anything, I maybe it was wishful thinking. I thought Hugh Jackman had a shot.
You know, I didn't really think he had a shot, but any other year, I think he probably would have been the front.
Don't worry, he's got a new Wolverine movie coming out, so that's a lock.
Well, what did you? I saw you tweet that you predicted 22 out of 24.
So it must not have been that unpredictable.
Well, exactly. Well, that's what it was, unpredictable up until the end. There, it all kind of came out where it was like, we're actually watching the ceremony. I was like, oh, yeah, this is what we expected to happen. There are no surprises
I'm
here.
I'm winning money.
Yeah.
I got 20 out of 24, which
very
I thought
nice.
Was respectable. And to be fair, I was one of those people who thought the Emmanuel Riva upset. And if I had been more logical, I could have got 21. But I really, you know, when I saw Amour, my first thought was this woman's going to win an Oscar. And then when she started to get a little bit buzz coming up, I'm like, well, I should go with my gut, which was that she would get an Oscar. And
always steers me wrong when I do that.
And I, on the other hand, at a certain point, was trying to shoot the moon on my picks because I had just fumbled it so badly and made a lot of ill-advised choices.
What were the two you got wrong, just out of curiosity?
Production design.
I got that wrong, too.
Yeah.
What did you pick?
Life of Pi.
I picked Anna Karenina.
You know, another good. Those were all great choices. I knew there was a lot of love for Life of Pi, and that's why I knew Ang Lee was going to win director.
Well, that screwed me up on sound editing. I picked
Life
of Pi, and
no, you always go with the musical.
No, that's sound mixing.
Oh, sound mixing. What one sound editing?
Sound editing was the tie.
It was a tie.
We had a tie this year for I think the sixth time in Oscar history, and it tied. It was. Zero Dark Thirty.
And Barbara Streisand.
Skyfall.
Yeah, and Skyfall. Yes. But it was two guys who looked identical. They
all
had
with the Lord Gandalf hair.
So I got that category wrong, and I had two chances.
But it was this. It was two guys, but then the dude who won Best Cinematography for Life of Pi also was rocking the Robert Richardson long white hair mane.
Or as they like to say on Film Drunk, Quentin Tarantino's Coke Wizard. That's what they. There's a great image of Richardson behind Tarantino while they're both applauding, and they always say Quentin Tarantino and his Coke Wizard.
He was Oliver Stone's Coke Wizard until Oliver Stone had a falling out with him.
So what do we think of Seth MacFarlane's host? Because look, he tweeted today that
It's the Kobayashi
Maru. He said, which is the nerdiest thing you could tweet, but I get it. It's like an unwinnable situation hosting the Oscars. And it really is. It is kind of a thankless job where you're always going to get shit on.
Everyone is always the worst host ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
According to Nikki Fink.
Yeah, except for, weirdly, the person who I thought was the worst host ever, Billy Crystal, last year, got raves.
Billy Crystal wasn't a bad host. He was a boring host. He was an uninspired host.
He was very pleased with himself. No one was laughing harder at his jokes than him.
He came in and saved the Oscars after Brett
Ratner.
Well,
it looked like he was laughing. It was just a botched facelift that he's had. He wasn't really laughing.
And the hair, he like colored his hair the night before. Like, we all know you're old. Like, who do you think you're fooling?
Now, I know, me and Sean were watching together because we do everything together. And
wait a second. Now, I want to remember what other category I got wrong. Production design and...
That's just good. Thanks for good podcasting.
It was something small. And by the way, technically I should say I got 21.5 because of the tie. Do we count that as
no?
We'll 22. It wasn't one of the big ones. It was...
Documentary short?
No. Oh, no, of course. It was I Went with Wreck-It Ralph.
I went with Wreck-It Ralph, too.
I couldn't imagine Brave beating Wreck-It Ralph.
I went with Frankenweenie. I thought they were going to give it to Tim Burton.
I didn't.
I can't live in a world where Tim Burton is an Oscar winner.
I didn't think Brave was all that good.
I didn't either.
But it was the weakest Pixar movie since Cars 2.
Cars.
Well, I didn't... we were watching it together, and I felt like I really loved Shatner. I think you thought there was too much Shatner. I could have all the Shatner in the world, but that's just me.
Was he drunk? I mean, it went on for way too long, and they kept going back to it and back to it. I'm like, this is boring.
You know what bothered me is that he was wearing like a Star Trek II uniform on the Next Generation set.
Yeah.
Now that might be really
that's even geekier than the Kobayashi.
But he was on that space station outside of Deep Space Nine.
Well, I'm out.
Well, but see, I actually thought that was fun, but it was this weird thing where I kind of understand. I kind of understand some of the blowback about the boob song, because it did feel so much like him trying to have his cake and eat it too, whereas like, I'm going to tell you this thing is awful, then I'm going to do the awful thing. And it's like, I also wondered, I mean, obviously the actresses were part of the bit, so they didn't have a problem with it, but I mean, I know I've read a bunch of articles that it's like, oh, it's misogynistic, and it is a little, but I don't know. It's that weird line between... I wonder if on the Family Guy, maybe it would have been funnier.
Exactly.
In
context.
Yeah.
I laughed really hard at the boob song, I have to admit. And this is a person who, like, a week ago was on a rant against the Women of L.A. video that...
Oh, yeah.
First of all, I think anything is fair game if it's funny enough. You can excuse any kind of offensive comedy if it's actually funny. I thought the boob song was pretty funny. I understand, especially the Vulture article
That
sort of broke
that.
It down. I was like, she makes some really excellent points. So I'm not going to tell anyone they shouldn't be offended. I just personally wasn't.
The New Yorker had a really humorless breakdown of the whole show. And I'm like, oh my God, I get where you're coming from, but you are a terrible woman and are probably awful in bed.
Of course. Of
well,
course,
that's
she
how
must
I,
be.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Sorry,
that's
Andrea.
Not misogynistic at all.
Yeah. But he's trying to top something
I see what you're doing. You're pretending to be that asshole.
Yeah, pretending.
A woman is frigid if she doesn't have a sense of humor.
He forgot Emmanuel Riva in the We Saw Your Boobs song, though.
Oh, my God. Well, that was the... Someone pointed that out, and I hadn't thought about that. But like, nobody watched Boys Don't Cry and was like, oh, yeah.
It was all rape scenes, too. Silkwood, Boys Don't Cry, Monster. It was all rape scenes.
He mentioned the Accused.
And I'm just like, oh, my God.
No, the thing that kind of saved the boob song for me was the kicker of Kate Winslet at the end.
Yeah.
It ends on a really high note. I actually have a question, because, I mean, you know, a few years back, Ricky Gervais, you know, when he hosted the Golden Globes, he's very, like, you know, it was almost like a roast. And, you know, that's a very more boozy event and everything. It's or at least it's portrayed that way. And, you know, Seth MacFarlane was snarky
but
a
it
little
didn't feel
bit.
Like a roast.
It didn't feel like a roast, but, I mean, are hosts getting too snarky? Is there something about that, or are we fine with
I
that?
I think we have this gauzy recollection of how pure and innocent and wonderful the Oscars used to be. I bet if you go back, watch any of those Bob Hope Oscars.
Johnny Carson was very cutting.
They were cutting. They were ripping into their own, to the audience, too. You know, I don't think there's no context here. We just live within this award season. Sorry, Janelle, what were you going to say?
Oh, I can't remember, but I actually thought Seth MacFarlane was fairly restrained for him.
I thought he was.
I mean, what did they think they were going to get? They got exactly what they wanted. Everyone's talking about it, and they got great ratings.
I thought he walked a pretty good line between, like, the old Hollywood stuff and the slightly snarky jokes. It got its highest ratings in 5 years, but do you attribute that to Seth MacFarlane, or is it just because... I mean, if you look at years where popular films are nominated, like the Avatar, the year Avatar was nominated, yeah. Big ratings, Return of the King, and you had a lot. I mean, Argo was a hit, Lincoln was a hit, Silver Linings was a hit, Life of Pi's a hit. Like those movies, do you think it's got to be that more than The Host?
Probably a combination of both. I'm sure Seth MacFarlane brought in some people who wouldn't have watched otherwise. I don't know if they stayed after the first 20 minutes.
The other thing, a lot of music.
I watched for the Chicago Tribute because that's a movie that we all talk about on a daily basis. I don't go a day without mentioning the classic Hollywood 2006 film that is Chicago.
Well, that
was 2002.
2002.
Oh, my God.
Well, that
even worse.
That was the most self-serving because the producers of Chicago produced the show. You know what's funny? Because that Catherine Zeta-Jones thing, I thought
she
was kind of...
the same.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was. I thought that was a little like, oh, you're clearly lip-syncing, and it's... But, and I was like, why are we talking about this? But then Jennifer Hudson kind of killed her song.
Gosh.
She did a really good job.
But if you're going to honor Hollywood musicals, don't pretend that Hollywood musicals started when Chicago came out. Do something from Sound of...
Well, why
I
not
think
do...
they wanted to do the... They said it was like the last 10 years, but what about Pitch Perfect or Hairspray or Rock of Ages? Well, maybe not Rock of Ages.
No, Rock of Ages.
But, I mean, there are other musicals other than Broadway shows that were turned into...
With
let's avoid Nine.
Yeah, let's avoid Nine
altogether. The only bomb in Daniel Day-Lewis's career.
Yeah.
But Jennifer Hudson...
Amazing.
She reminded me why she won an Oscar for that movie.
That's why she was there. She was like, bitches, this is why.
And other good musical, like, I mean, it was Adele's always phenomenal, I think.
No, I adore her.
And I could listen to her give an acceptance speech all day.
And how great for Russell Crowe to, like, show up, you know, with everyone bagging on him.
I love Russell Crowe.
I do, too. It was nice of him to show up for the show since he didn't really show up for the movie.
His role was his role. You know what?
Nope. I love the Russell Crowe. You cannot defend his performance in Lame Days. I have tried.
Maybe he shouldn't have been in that movie.
Well, what's crazy is when I heard he was cast, I thought it was brilliant casting. Yeah. Brilliant. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, this is not working. And why did no one stop this? And it's I made this joke because I have literally seen Lame Days 30 times. And I'm kind of joking, but I'm kind of not. By the sixth or seventh time, you don't mind his performance.
Of the film.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will see it five more times,
yes.
And I'll get
and
back.
Then we'll get back
in
to
there.
You.
Yeah.
I was a little under. I loved Shirley Bassey singing Goldfinger just because that's like
Finger.
Finger.
She's great, but I thought the Bond tribute overall was kind of.
It was a DVD extra. It was just a montage.
Yeah, it was after all that hype.
I feel like they should have just scrapped it. Just had her come out and sing and scrap the stupid Bond montage. It didn't do anything. It didn't add anything.
They couldn't have got somebody to come out and...
I thought I heard they were getting all the Bonds.
Well, I
Did
know...
Did that fall through?
I know for a fact Pierce Brosnan said in an interview he wouldn't do it.
What's he's too good for that?
He's bitter that he's still not James Bond.
Mm.
And I guess, I don't know. I don't know if he's the thing that holds it all together.
Yeah, Sean Connery was gung-ho about it. And,
but I mean, even if you just had Connery...
Oh, God, yes.
That would be enough.
Yeah.
And I'm sure
that's all anyone wants.
And I'm sure Roger Moore would do it. He seems like a fun-loving fellow.
And what's George Lazenby doing? You think he wouldn't show up?
Not much, and I know because I do movie reviews on the PM show with Larry Minetti, and he was a guest. And if you're a guest on the PM show with Larry Minetti...
You're sitting in a bar in Connecticut, got nothing better to do.
Poor George Lazenby. He wasn't that bad.
No, he wasn't.
No, he really wasn't.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service is actually a really great Bond film.
Mm-hmm. He just had the misfortune to follow Sean Connery.
I think Ms. Fortune was actually the name of a Bond woman.
Now, the speeches, I thought Anne Hathaway, you had all this time to probably prepare a great speech. You knew you were going to win. The show made jokes about how you were going to win, and she just read a laundry
list. She gets up there and goes, oh, it actually happened. Or, this
oh, I couldn't believe it. It came true.
It came true. Shut up.
I find myself defending Anne Hathaway a lot because I do like her as a person and a performer, but there is a calculatedness that I understand the Hathaway haters.
I think it's the same with Natalie Portman. There felt like a little bit of calculation. She was such a front runner.
Well, you know, I think I said at the Golden Globes, you know, when the category came up, I was like, now it's time for the Anne Hathaway Award, and she will be the only one who pretends to be surprised.
She's the pull of Taylor Swift.
Oh, my God! But you know what? That's going to be tough to know what, because, I mean, you don't want to walk up there. I mean, I guess you could own it.
Yeah, you can't win. You can't win if you're Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, and I feel like, again, let's
but
get
she was
back.
Just stumbly. Forget it. Wasn't that. It was just she was stumbly in her speech.
But let's get back to sexism. I feel like a guy could get away with owning it more.
Like Daniel Day-Lewis.
But I remember when Jamie Foxx kept winning. He would get up there and he'd make everybody sing and he'd make everybody... Like, he turned it into this big thing. Hathaway couldn't get up there and like, I dreamed the dream. And everybody like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, the king of the world or speaking in fucking...
Navi.
Navi.
When James Cameron spoke in Navi at the Golden Globe.
What's his face? That's horrible. Please edit that out. Just kidding. You don't have to. When Ang Lee won for Brokeback Mountain, remember he went up there and he said something like, I wish I could quit you, or it looks like I couldn't quit you.
Yeah.
And it was pretty bad.
But you know what? He said it in his Ang Lee.
Exactly.
By the way, this was a tweet. This came to my attention the next day. Ronan Farrow said, wow, I wish that... that was my legendary Academy Award winning father, director. Ronan Farrow's father is Woody Allen.
Woody Allen, yeah.
Yeah, and he does not like his dad so much.
Well, did you see the what was it, the Mother's Day tweet? It was like, Happy Mother's Day, or is it around my house, sister day, or something? Yeah.
Well, I didn't know this about Ronan Farrow very quickly. He's a savant. He graduated college at 16. He's 25 years old. He like basically runs the State Department.
Is he adopted?
No, he's Mia
Farrow. He's the biological
child of Woody Allen and Mia Farrow. Good genes.
Well, I love you, Woody Allen. And I always
even though
will.
You're a shitty father, terrible human being.
But he was a great... He did what he needed to do for me. Give me a lot of great films to watch. And that's all I care about.
Well, I think we can also
Can we talk about the woman of the night?
Kavanjane
Wallace.
Oh, yes. Okay. God. Yes. That little...
runt.
Oh, you know, the other thing. Like, The Onion crossed a line. I get it.
They C-worded her.
Yeah, I don't want...
Yeah, if you don't know, The Onion put out some tweet during the show that called her a cunt.
Yeah, I think we can all agree. The tweet was, I think we can all agree that there's two words in this I'm not going to be able to say. Kavanjane Wallace is a C-word. And, they apologize. Here's my thing.
She's a 9-year-old.
Yeah, I get it. They crossed a line. They very quickly, very sincerely, and very classily apologized. I think we should move on. And I worry about the society where we want to continue to punish people after they apologize. Like, what are we teaching people?
And here's the thing. It's a bad joke, but I understand what... I understand the joke. It's not like it's this... Because I'll be honest with you, on this podcast, I made a similar joke.
Yeah.
I didn't call her that. I called her something else. But I kept joking because I didn't think she should win. And I kept saying that if she wins, she's going to be the enemy of the podcast. Because it's funny, because it's a 9-year-old, and clearly I can't mean it.
It's like my Yelchin nemesis.
Yes, exactly.
She. The only thing is, I don't want The Onion to start playing it safe. I don't think anybody wants that. So they said they were sorry. Let's accept it.
Let's move on from that. Ben Affleck wins his second Oscar, this time as a producer.
Yep.
I loved Ben Affleck's speech, actually.
I thought it was the best speech of the night.
Really heartfelt. Yeah. And I just thought, you know, this is a guy... I mean, it's hard to have sympathy for a guy who was still always starring in blockbuster films and stuff. But, I mean...
A movie called Paycheck.
But
on the nose.
The industry did kind of shit on him a little bit for a while there. And I think, you know, he really did. He has directed. I like all three of his films that he's directed.
I don't want to say he's gotten worse, but his movies for me, Gone Baby Gone, is his masterpiece.
Really?
Yeah, I love that what he did with that movie. I think all three of his films are excellent.
I think they're all great. Town is probably my favorite.
I remember I was friends at the time with someone who worked in the production company that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon had. And she told me, Ben Affleck's going to be, he wrote a script, he's going to be directing this movie.
And you
laughed. What do you mean? I go, Ben Affleck's directing a movie, whatever. She goes, he comes in every morning, he's in at 8 a.m., he goes into his office with his computer and a copy of this book, Gone Baby Gone, and we bring him lunch, and he doesn't walk out till 6 p.m., and he just writes all day long. He goes, he did this for a month and a half, and he came out with an amazing script.
Yeah.
And she goes, he's going to do a great job, Ben Affleck director, whatever.
Yeah.
And honestly, he just showed everyone wrong, and he proved everyone. He said, you know what, you just work hard and, you know, you just need a couple people to believe in you. And it doesn't hurt that George Clooney's your buddy and is helping, you know, bankroll things a little bit.
But still,
No, but of course, you know what? He has to show up. He's got to do the work. And now, you know, he's going to be. I remember Kevin Smith, who's known Ben Affleck since, you know, Ben Affleck used to whip his dick out and put it on his shoulder when they were directing, you know, Mallrats. When he saw Argo, he goes, holy shit, they're going to give this motherfucker an Oscar.
Yeah.
Now he's got one.
Yeah. I mean, I remember hearing as far back as August.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Argo's the movie to beat. And it stayed that way.
Now, one thing I want to ask you also with speeches, and I actually thought this was, I legitimately thought this was awful. Them playing the Jaws theme.
It was the. I had this moment where I was like, "What if Spielberg wins and goes over? Do they play him off with
they
the Jaws
Schindler's
theme?"
They play Schindler's List.
Yeah. At least Indiana Jones. Come on, playing people off is terrible. In any, you know, you can't give me a 20-minute musical number and then say someone can't have more than a minute to give the speech.
And he was clearly building up to something that it was gonna. You know, I mean, look, you can't have people go on forever, but he hadn't talked all that long. And the thing about it's humiliating to be played off to begin with, and then to do it with the Jaws thing.
Yes.
It's just insulting. I thought, and I kept thinking, like, this poor guy is going to walk off the stage, and he's going to be thinking about, I got played off to the Jaws theme, not that I won an Oscar. It really, they were trying to be cute and funny. It was just fucking rude. It really bothered me.
I think the only thing that would have been worse would have been the Psycho theme.
And this goes to my whole thing of everybody always complaining. I hate the next day. Everyone, not necessarily film people I talk to, but on all the other news outlets and stuff, everyone's like, oh, it was so long. Oh, it was so long. Where else are you going?
Yeah.
What else are you doing that night? You're here watching the Oscars. Who gives a shit how long
You never complain
it is?
The Super Bowl's too long.
Yeah, I mean...
You know what you're in for when it starts.
Yeah, right? I mean...
40 minutes of musicals and a Chicago tribute.
Hey, there was no, like, Life Achievement Award, though.
Well, you know, they never...
did that... They packaged it all into one.
Yeah, they've been
for
doing
the last
that.
Couple of years, they roll it up into the fucking technical awards at the Governor's Ball.
Well, thank God, so we could have, you know, the boob song.
See, I would rather see some people... Like, a few years ago, Roger Corman got one. I'm like,
awesome.
I would... Because I think that's a great person who should get an honorary Oscar. And then I would have loved to have seen him say something, but instead they do
it... If it weren't for the Lifetime Achievement Oscar, we would have never gotten to see Sidney Lumet's daughter up in the balcony. Do you remember this?
Is
this Jenny Lumet?
I don't know, but she was wearing quite a dress.
Ooh, I'm going to have to look this one up.
Yeah, look up Sidney Lumet's daughter from the Oscars when he got his award. It was fantastic.
Sean, you also pointed out there was a big theme of tall women with short men, which I have no problem with.
It was, yeah, they kept dragging them out there. It was you had Dustin Hoffman and Charlize Theron.
I wondered, that seemed very on purpose, didn't it?
It was
like
comical.
All for the visual joke.
Yeah, and then Jane Fonda with... Henry Ford? Who the hell was it?
Henry Ford?
Who the hell did she come out with? I don't know why that just popped into my head.
I don't remember who she was with.
I thought she was alone. I don't even remember being with someone.
No, she came out with somebody. Oh, we'll never know.
But they just, all night long, I think you know what it was. I think it was a spillover from the red carpet with Christine Chenoweth, who I guess was the lost hobbit.
She was
the 13th dwarf.
She is tiny.
I didn't realize how tiny she was until she was talking to Adele. And it was like, I mean... Chenoweth was barely in the frame.
I did.
And she was doing one of these. She was doing. It reminds me on the Kevin and Bean show on K-Rock, the local radio station, during the press day for the Lakers before the season started, they sent Brad Williams, who is a midget comedian, and they had him go do the interviews, and he was interviewing Pau Gasol, and he literally, all you see, he had to hold the microphone above his head, and then you see the photos, and it's Pau Gasol leaning over, and there's just the top of the microphone in the frame, because Brad Williams is about 3'6", and... Pretty fucking funny.
Oh, my God.
But let's get to the person of the night. And that's a big... We're a big fan of her here on the podcast, Jennifer Lawrence.
Okay, who's not a fan of her?
I mean, that's the thing. She's so charming. She's like... And in the interviews, she comes off so weird and natural and just like she doesn't give a crap.
Clueless and calculating, though. It's like a weird blend. If she knows exactly what she's doing... And she's totally clueless and just kind of making it up as she goes along.
Well, she, you know, it's funny because she is 22, and I frequently forget that, because sometimes she speaks like a 40-year-old and sounds so profound and amazing, and then other times she'll get excited over a picture of a bear. And that's when you're like, oh, that's right, you're 22.
Did you see the footage of Jack Nicholson
yeah,
hitting
her? Yeah, it's hilarious.
Only Jack, see, Woody Allen wouldn't be able to get away with that.
I don't know that Jack got away with it.
I think Jack got away with it.
He came off as creepy. Creeped out, yeah.
I think George Clooney would have been able to get away with it.
George Clooney's not as old as Jack Nicholson.
That's true.
Dirt is not as old as Jack Nicholson.
I don't know. I felt like, for me, he got away with it because she went along with it so much.
Well, she kind of encouraged Beatty. It. She was the one who was like, maybe a new girlfriend.
Yeah.
And, but just her reaction, where her
For those of you who don't know, she was getting interviewed by George Stephanopoulos, and you see first behind her, a little bit out of frame, you see Jack Nicholson, he stops, he sees her, pulls out a handkerchief, he starts, like, removing the sweat from his face, and he's putting himself, he's fixing the silly putty that is, you know, his cheeks, and he comes up and goes, I'm sorry, I don't mean to do this, but you are wonderful, I love the film. And her face is just shocked, because this is Jack Nicholson, and, he's talking to her, and you kind of the audio is a little hard to hear. But then he says, "I saw the film. I loved it. You were wonderful." And then he says, "You remind me of an old girlfriend of mine." And then she says, "Well, maybe a new girlfriend of yours." And I think he was a little taken aback by that.
Yeah, totally. She's a saucy
one. That was the thing for him. He liked that she was giving it back.
Yeah. And then he goes, "Well, we'll talk about that."
I thought about it. I'll be waiting.
And this is why we love Jennifer Lawrence, because she plays along with this stuff. And also in the interview room, it's like she kind of suffered no fools. Like what
did you
do?
All those questions. All those people must be professional moderators. They ask the worst questions.
What did you do to get ready? I showered.
Yeah. I woke up. I tried the dress on. I showered.
Are you worried about peeking too soon? Well, I wasn't.
Yeah, until now.
Yeah.
And then she goes, I'm sorry. I just had a shot.
You know, here's the thing. She made her way up to the Oscar stage, and she fell. She fell on the stairs, which is, you know, it could be mortifying. She played it off really well, and last night I saw Zooey Deschanel on Conan O'Brien, and she made the joke of, she's like, I really am happy she fell, because it was like, yay, awkward girls are awesome. Like, you know.
It was
like,
adorkable.
It was adorkable. It was kind of an adorkable moment.
Someone made a really good point saying if anyone had to fall, I'm glad it was her. Well, she can play it off. Imagine if it had been Emmanuel Riva.
Well, you're getting a little ahead of me here.
Oh, sorry.
Because you got a little ahead of me. I don't know what to do. The point is, Jennifer Lawrence is walking up these steps. Mm-hmm. She falls. She's got everyone's in these great gowns. Of course someone's bound to fall eventually. The Oscar steps are a fucking hazard.
They are.
They are a hazard for these women wearing heels and dresses, and eventually a great actress like Jennifer Lawrence was bound to be taken out. And you're right. What if it had been Emmanuel Riva? She would have died. She'd be dead. She'd have died on her 86th birthday. Thanks, Academy. You just killed an old woman on her birthday. And that is why this week the enemy of the podcast is the fucking steps of the Oscars. Fuck you, Oscar steps. You're the enemy of the podcast. How many beautiful young starlets are going to have to suffer before you build a ramp or even a small elevator to get them up onto the stage? Fuck you, Oscar steps. You almost ruined Jennifer Lawrence's night, and we don't abide that on the Will Sean podcast. Admittedly, this enemy's a bit of a stretch. But the Oscars, which we were relying on us giving us an enemy, didn't really give us anyone to hate.
Last year was Meryl Streep.
Last year was Meryl Streep, which didn't really give us anything to hate except that she made us lose our Oscar pools last year because we all went Viola Davis. This year, the Oscars are a bit of a stretch. But fuck you, steps. Build a ramp. Build a ramp next time.
Teleportation. That's why we need teleportation.
It would make it quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially for those poor short documentary subject winners that have to come down from the balcony.
The back. Yeah.
They get a minute to talk. It takes them 45 seconds to get to the stage and get up there like, wah, wah, wah.
And because she fell, she got all frazzled, forgot to thank David O. Russell, forgot to thank Harvey Weinstein, and now Harvey Weinstein's going to have her killed.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, there's going to be a real arrow in Hunger Games catching fire, and she's going to get Brandon Lee.
So you know what? Hollywood's Oscar steps, you just killed a great actress, because Weinstein's got no choice but to retaliate. Well, the Oscars are over.
Oh, thank God.
Here's the thing.
Four months of shitty movies now.
I know. And then we start to get into some good stuff, but not necessarily Oscar bait.
Iron Man 3 and...
What's going to win next year, Janelle?
Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay. You heard it here first.
What do you mean Rush? Ron Howard's Rush, the Formula One film.
I'm hearing great things.
We're starting... Right now, I am starting the... You're going to be hearing about this fucking movie till October.
Are you starting... Are you thinking Chris Hemsworth and Olivia Wilde for Best Actress?
Yeah. That's what's
I'm laughing now, but who knows? In a year, I might be like...
I'm going to hold you to this Wolf of Wall Street, and a year from now we'll see when they open the envelope. Yeah. If it, Wolf of Wall Street's Scorsese's new film.
With Leonardo DiCaprio and Jonah Hill. Can we give Leo an Oscar, for God's sake?
I thought he was going to get it for Django.
I thought he was going to be nominated. I really did.
Before I'd even seen the movie, I heard that he had it in the bag.
Thank God he's Leonardo DiCaprio, because if not, sad man.
You know what?
No, he's not sad. He's spending time with Jennifer Lawrence.
Who is he now?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
They would make beautiful
children. That's what I read today.
You heard it here first.
After an Oscar party, yeah.
Oh. You know what? Let's try to squeeze in a couple of other topics, because why not? Because we have to find a way to move on. We talked about the Oscars so much last week. We did a whole Oscar show. We got to move on, Will Schoen Podcast. So I'm going to throw a bit of casting news that caught my eye that I liked. In Michael Bay's I do like this.
Oh, fuck this.
Well, I don't like the fact that this movie exists, but I like this casting choice. In Michael Bay's produced Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle film, Megan Fox is going to be April O'Neil.
How crazy is that?
This surprised
me. Bygones be bygones.
Exactly, because the whole controversy with she called him Hitler, right?
Yeah.
And apparently you could just call anyone Hitler these days. You know who should have been April O'Neil? Jessica Chastain.
See, I think you're giving this movie more legitimacy. Yeah. And that's why I think Megan Fox is a fine choice, because this movie is probably going to be a nightmare.
As long as Paul Giamatti voices Splinter the Rat, I'm happy.
I don't even understand. It's not, by the way, it's not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This is going to be called Ninja Turtles.
Oh.
And they're going to be space aliens.
Oh, that's right.
Confusingly enough, after Renaissance painters.
Yeah, of course.
So at this point, at least throw Megan Fox into the mix.
Sure.
Well, I mean... You excited about this Ninja Turtles?
Nothing. You know, I thought I was not excited about it. If I could have possibly gotten less excited, it would be with Castine and Megan Fox.
You're not really the targeted demographic on this film.
Exactly.
I don't think she's that. I think she knows what she is.
I thought she was great. We talked about this in This Is 40, which is a movie I liked a lot more than...
More than the rest of us.
Oh, yeah, I despised that movie.
I think that movie, like I said, I think it's like some weird avant-garde Apatow film where I'm just going to film my family with Paul Rudd playing me.
Well, I thought that they were going to realize at the end that they were entitled Brentwood assholes, but then I realized, no, they're the heroes of this movie.
No, my argument for that film is that you have to take it, you have to treat it almost like a sci-fi film. No, you do. You need to accept that this is the world and this is the reality of those people, and what... are serious concerns and issues for them, may not be for everyone else, but for these people in that world, this is drama, these are the stakes, and it is what it is. And as long as you accept the movie on its own terms, I think it's a lot easier to be okay with it. And I think if you didn't know that these are Judd Apatow's kids and this is his wife, I think you also, if you remove that element, I bet you if you showed that movie to someone with no context, it would have a very different reaction to it.
They would just be like, why are these people saying they're broke? They live in a beautiful house.
And they'd also be saying, there's no plot of this movie.
That was my main problem.
That's the big problem.
And why do they both have the same daddy issue?
You know what? Megan Fox is the best thing about that film.
She's the best thing about that film.
And not even from a superficial standpoint. I'm saying this right now. She's the best thing in that film. Because, again, Megan Fox knows what she is. I'm going to end on one. We always like to end on a weird story that we hear in the news each week. I don't know if you heard this story, Janelle. Out of the world of entertainment, and by that I mean outside of the world of entertainment, a 33-year-old mother got in trouble, big trouble, like there's child endangerment charges against her, for hiring strippers for her son's 16th birthday at a bowling alley.
Female strippers?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Thought maybe there's a magic mic angle to this.
So I guess the question is, would you hire your son, if you had a son, strippers for his birthday party?
Does anyone say yes?
This woman, apparently. Let's break this down quickly. She's 33, has a 16-year-old son, which means at some
think
point
of that.
She made some poor decisions as a teenager.
Yeah.
It's creepy. that
the
you
bowling
would go-
alley aspect is the creepiest.
It's in public,
it.
Not like in the basement.
Yeah.
Where? What bowling alley is
How
this?
How is this any different than hiring like a Batman or a Superman to come to the birthday party?
I'll tell you what, it is a big difference. Because if my mother brought in a squirrel, I don't want my mother thinking of me in any sexual way. And clearly she would be if she's like, well, he's old now and he's going to, you know, be turned on by this, so we're bringing him a stripper. You know who it's great for, though? The other kids at the party.
Of course.
Who don't have to, who are judgment-free on the whole thing.
And they just get to enjoy lap dances.
Where did this happen, do you know?
Upstate New York. You would think Florida.
Yeah.
Because whenever anything fucked up happens in this country, it's usually Florida.
Upstate New York's got some...
Well, because it's fucking cold. All they have there is a pizzerias and bowling alleys.
And bowling alleys with strippers. They combined it all into one place because nobody wants to leave because it's cold. So, pizzeria, bowling alley, strip club.
Yeah, I think I'd be mortified. But, you know, once again, as I've said multiple times, I was an aggressively awkward adolescent. So, I didn't really figure shit out, and you could argue they still haven't, until I was about 23 or so. So I would not have responded well to strippers at my birthday party.
Do we know who reported this? Or
one of the parents saw... This happened in November. It only came out now. One of the parents saw their son's Facebook page.
Oh, Facebook.
And with pictures.
Yeah. Facebook. Facebook. Yelchin.
Yeah, you know, Facebook ruins... I've often said the problem with Facebook is it allows nobody to be able to lie anymore.
That's why I'm not Facebook friends with a lot of my coworkers.
Very
because
smart.
If I say, oh, I'm sick, and then someone tags me in a picture at Disneyland, yeah. They're like, you were at Disneyland. I was like, no, I was sick. No, you were right here at Disneyland.
The nightmare has happened. My mother is on Facebook.
So is my mother. I have not friended her.
Nope, she friended... I can't turn down my mom.
I can't. She's been sitting in friend request purgatory for almost 2 years now.
You
and my
smart.
Dad's on Twitter, and he has one follower, my brother-in-law.
What a kiss ass.
And let me tell you what, this is the exact reason why I am not on Facebook. Does it make networking harder? No, I just say, give me your fucking email instead, and then we problem solve.
But people have to send you specialized invites to things.
Yeah, you miss out.
Oh, no, but here's the thing. Because I'm in constant communication with a lot of people. You've even commented this. Yeah. I keep in touch with everybody. So if there's a party going on, I hear about it through somebody
else.
And
it's in the Fox One calendar and everything's
Yeah, solved. And I put it in the calendar. But what's great is if there's a party going on and I don't want to go to it, if I knew about your party, I would have been there.
I'm not on Facebook.
Yeah, you should have remembered to send in the
So logo. Basically, you're just an online asshole.
Hey.
Or an offline asshole in this case, yeah.
Well, listen, Janelle, thanks for breaking all this stuff down with us, and I hope you had fun.
Absolutely. Thank you for the water.
And the whole time, there's been a sealed bottle of wine on the table, and we couldn't crack open.
Before we go, let's one more time plug your blog and everything about you.
Let's see, twitter.com/JanelleRiley.
We'll slow down there. Twitter?
Twitter. Oh Good Another Blog at goodanotherblog.wordpress.com.
Backstage.
Yeah, follow the Twitter account, though, because sometimes I post Futurama porn.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
You know what? I started following your account recently because I knew you were coming on, and I have not seen this yet. I'm going to be looking out for it.
It gives Futurama the word Bender a whole new meaning.
Well, apparently what happened was someone in my building threw out a big bag.
I did
see
this.
Yes, I did see this.
Yeah.
Follow her on Twitter. You're going to get Futurama porn.
It's kind of astounding.
I got so many followers after I got 2,000 retweets from taking a photo of my neighbor's tossed out Futurama porn and whole bunch of new followers, and I really hope they don't think that this is a regular thing.
I was also following at the Independent Spirit Awards someone like stole your seat and ate your food.
What an asshole. Yeah.
That guy's the enemy of the podcast. Fuck you. You and I hope you trip up the Oscar stairs and break your face.
Not even the Oscars. He didn't deserve
Steven
an
Oscar. Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Steven Soderbergh, you shouldn't have eaten Janelle Riley's
Take it
meal.
Or seat.
Do you want to hear the worst Q&A story ever?
Yes.
Yes, I think we have time.
I'll keep it short. Steven Soderbergh with the Editors Guild. Apparently, editors don't like Steven Soderbergh because he edits his own movies. So a good German screening, one person stood up and said, don't you think you're raping the collaborative process by editing your own movies? And I was like, I'm sorry, that's a strong word. What do you mean by rape? And he said, well, when I say rape, I mean... rape.
Oh, God.
And I just, like, I That's where, like, your moderating skills are supposed to kick in, and I was at a loss. But he handled it very classily, and I pointed out that the final product speaks for itself. Unfortunately, the final product in question was the Good German. Yeah.
Arguably the weakest of his films.
Exactly.
The Coen brothers edit their own films, too.
No, they have some guy named Roger King.
Yeah, well, he also, Soderbergh's got some dude named Peter Andrews to shoot his films. That we know way too much esoterica.
Yeah, this, anyone who's not, Hey, Sean, why don't you do the thing where you plug your things?
I got my book, Amazon Kindle, Triumvirs, Triumvirs. I don't have any opera stuff coming up, but some of you were at my opera talk last week on Sunday. Thank you. It was much appreciated. And follow me on Twitter at TheSeanDavid. Also on Facebook, like me, Sean David. And, usual letterpress, words with friends, Instagram. Hey, I'm an amazing Instagrammer, so you better be following me there. Good stuff.
Don't play them on Word, Words with Friends.
Or Letterpress.
You can follow me at The Real Will Link. You can also listen to me review movies every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The PM Show with Larry Minetti at crntalk.com. I try to tell old people what to go see, and inevitably it's only stuff young people would like. You can also read articles of mine at the film blog U1Can, like the city in France, .com. And I have an article up there about why this was one of my favorite award seasons and why I can't wait till next year.
And you're also working on that article in defense of Leni Riefenstahl, right?
Yes. it's going to be my
Nuremberg Rallies Revisited.
And next week on the show, we have Michael Dugan, who hosts a essay reading show called Tattle Tales. They're comedic essays. It's a weekly show. And on March 14th, a certain podcaster who's talking right now will be performing at it. So
Mark Maron?
I said he's speaking right now. Yeah, see, I got you.
He could be speaking.
Well, he's not. I cut out his tongue. And the week after that, I have to take down the competition. And the week after that, we have a terrific writer, Stephanie Flaxman, and she has written a couple of books, one about the philosophy behind tattoos. I'm very interested in this because I've always been attracted to women with lots of tattoos. Maybe we can discuss these tattoos. And she's also writing a book on heartbreak, which also coincides with me being attracted to women with lots of tattoos. So this should be a great couple of weeks, and we got all the March booked. We got some big surprise. We got some comedians. We got some fun stuff coming up, so it's going to be great.
And Janelle Riley following me on Twitter.
Yeah, you just got it.
Excellent. We're all following each other. This is great. Janelle, thank you so much.
Until next Oscars.
Thank you.
We're finished.
We're finished.